This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Nau mai hoki mai ki te hōtaka reo irirangi nei ki a Matara Kaumahi Mā. Welcome back to this radio show, Calling All Workers, on Manawatu People's Radio. Calling All Workers is the radio show of Unions Manawatu, the local affiliate council of the New Zealand Council of Trade Unions. Unions Manawatu is made up of officials, delegates and members of NZCTU affiliated unions, such as ETU, Unite, Workers First, PPTA, TEU, Manufacturing and Construction Union, Tax Pro and more. You can find Unions Manawatu on all the usual social media platforms such as Facebook, Instagross, Mastodon and Blue Sky. Just search Unions Manawatu on any of these platforms and you'll find us. That's where you'll find all the latest info about what's happening with UM. If you want to flick us an email, send it to unionsmanawatu@gmail.com, all lowercase, no spaces. A quick disclaimer, but anything said in the next half hour are our opinions only and not the official positions of Unions Manawatu, the NZCTU or any of our respective unions. E mihi ana, ki ngā mātua tūturu ko rangi nui e tūnei, ko papatua nuku e takotua nei. A, ngā mihi nunui ki te mana whenua o te papaioia, teni whetū ki te rangi, ko rangi tāne ki te whenua. Today, Gina, Andy and myself, organisers with ETU, PPTA and EU respectively, discuss the recently passed Employment Relations Pay Deductions for Partial Strikes Amendment Act 2025. There's a bit of ranting, but stick with it, whānau.
Kia ora whānau, I'm John from ETU.
I'm Andy from PPTA.
Yeah, it's Gina from ETU.
We are discussing. Are we going to parrot each other?
Why not?
We're going to be discussing some of Brooke Van Belden and the ACT Party's absolutely wonderful changes that they've been making to legislation that favours workers.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Am I being facetious enough? Do you think they'll pick that up?
I don't know. How strong a sarcasm can we go for when a law, you know, is going to put penalties in front of people who don't already receive penalties and is going to be trying to frame it in a way that brings fairness back to the employment relationship, you know? Fairness and equality by punishing people for, you know, just doing their job description.
And we are referring to the partial strikes legislation, the pay deduction for partial strikes that has been brought in recently.
Ooh.
Ooh. By Brooke, darling Brooke.
Brooke the crook.
Which penalises workers for doing their job, to rule, basically.
Do we have to cut it if we say penalises instead of penalises?
Penal? I've got it on my brain. I'm probably not cutting that out.
We'll try and answer the first question.
What is it?
What is a partial strike?
Yeah.
Okay. A partial strike is a low-level industrial campaign that has to be discussed, voted on, approved by membership of a union before being undertaken as part of a campaign to support the negotiations. Since 2018, employers have not been allowed to deduct wages for this. So partial strikes are things like go slow. So like if you're in a workplace where health and safety is really important, so you slow down your work, so you do all those checks really thoroughly. Or if you're in like a workplace where people habitually exceed their KPIs, and you just go back down to your base KPIs.
What's a KPI, Andy?
A key performance indicator.
Key performance indicator. So how they measure the work that you do.
Yeah. Productivity output.
Yeah. Deciding whether you get a pay rise every year.
Mm.
Or in other places where perhaps your duties or a physical output isn't as clear cut, but you take on extra work. E.g. school camps or after school activities, a school show. Things like
SOPs.
That. Yes.
SOPs.
Running out the SOPs.
So a real, I guess...
OT ban. Favourite one.
What's OT, Gina?
Working We stopped talking to Oranga Tamariki.
So an example from my past work history from New Zealand Post is that I worked nights and we would sort trays of mail. This was stuff that the machine spat out that needed to be manually sorted. We would have trolleys and trolleys with trays and trays loaded up, and they worked out that a reasonable productivity rate would be to sort four of those trays an hour if it was thin mail, or perhaps like 12 an hour if it's super thick mail. The issue is, though, over time, Andy, you called it mission creep?
Yeah.
Yeah? What's mission creep?
That's when they just keep chipping away. Oh, you know, it'd be terribly wonderful if you just add this little bit in here. You know, it's not part of your job description, but it would really help things move along smoothly.
Just gradually normalizing more and more work.
Yeah, yeah. Would you kindly do... We're all a family
would
here.
Would you kindly do this? Yeah. So what happened at New Zealand Post is that although they said that the baseline measurement for sorting mail was four trays an hour, you could easily do like six, maybe eight. If you were super hopped up on energy drinks, maybe you could do 12 because you're in that flow. Over time, that just became normalized, and they would start to expect you to exceed what the normal rate of productivity was. So in terms of a work to rule, if you as a union member had voted on just doing exactly what we were expected to do, perhaps New Zealand Post at that point might have said, well, you know, that's a bit of a partial strike because you guys have decided collectively to only sort the amount of mail that the baseline level of productivity.
Yeah.
That's something that my mind goes back to when I think about partial strikes.
And for me, this mission creep, I don't know, for some of the listeners who actually listen regularly might recognize me from the Marxist episodes. this is kind of like a major part of some of like the hidden exploitation that happens in capitalism. You know, the whole system is based on unpaid labor, and then you're expected all the time to go back and do more unpaid labor over and above what's already captured in your job description. So, you know, if you're just doing your job description, what you were hired to do, the government's going to be like, hey, maybe you get paid less now, which is just, that's borderline criminal, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's the whole system of capitalism, right, is that that unpaid, unacknowledged labour is completely worked into it from bottom to top.
Yeah.
I don't want to go off on a tangent, but I had this conversation yesterday with my partner that anyone who believes that you can reform capitalism hasn't acknowledged the fact that the whole thing is rotten from top to bottom.
Yeah.
Look at me like Dr. Zeus, rotten from top to bottom. but yeah.
It's working exactly the way they wanted it.
Exactly right. Exactly.
Imagine trying to reform slavery.
No, that's exactly it. The whole American economy is based off slavery, and when they had to free the slaves, they just brought in what? The 13th Amendment.
Yeah, they just shifted slavery to the prisons.
Exactly. And it's the same as in New Zealand, where farming is a massive part of our economy that is done on stolen land, and then the labourers that they need to clean the farmhouses and do the farm labour are all Māori, because in that Native Schools Act and in subsequent, you know, legislation, basically they're not allowing Māori to go into higher education, not preparing them for that, aiming them for that, keeping them in labouring jobs and keeping wahine Māori and being like housekeepers.
Yeah.
So whether it's the American economy or the New Zealand economy, from top to bottom, it's built off slave labour, basically.
Yeah.
How the hell, almost said something else, but how the hell are you supposed to reform that?
Yeah, exactly. And then on top of that, you know, if listeners want a bigger deep dive, but they can go back and look through the back catalogue. But, you know, even when a commodity is sold allegedly at its value, there's unpaid labour already captured in that. Even in the very best of circumstances, like a Nordic social democracy kind of thing, you're still getting exploited.
Absolutely.
And this just entrenches that even further by saying that any attempt just to get back to your base level job description in an organized way, in solidarity with your co-workers in your union, is going to result in at minimum a 10% deduction in your wages.
Yes.
So
how do they work the 10% out?
Blanket.
Yes, there are two mechanisms within this law. Let us get into quoting chapter and verse.
Andy's got the legislation in front of him.
Gosh, I do like my best like D&D nerd kind of voice.
Do it.
Okay. If there is a partial strike, the employer may make a specified pay deduction from the salary or wages of an employee who is a party to the strike, being a partial strike. However, The employer must not make a specified pay deduction if the partial strike is lawful on the grounds referred to in Section 84, which is about health and safety strikes. So, you know, where your employer has refused to make the workplace safe, so you just have to withdraw your labour. The employee is paid by piecework, and this partial strike results in the employee reducing their normal output or in respect of any period of the partial strike that involves a refusal to work overtime. So there's in there, it's just they may make a specified pay deduction. The amount must be calculated in accordance with 95C, which we'll get into, blah, blah, blah. So the calculation...
At most, they can only take 10%.
Nope. At least 10%. So there's two things. So there's a specified pay deduction, which is where they do a calculation of a specified output or the usual hours of work for the day of the partial strike, which may be by reference to information contained in the wages, time records, employment agreement, roster, or any other document or record used in the normal course of the employee's employment, and identifying the work that the employee will not be performing because of that strike. So then they will estimate how much time the employee would have spent doing the work that is now no longer being done, and calculating the time, therefore, as a percentage of their usual hours of work. However, unions may request information about the application or calculation of the specified pay deduction. The employer must respond to this request. So, if you know, so there is room for us as unions to then like wage a concerted campaign of bogging this down, because they can't deduct your pay until they've notified you it's going to happen, and then you can contact your union, join your union right now, and you can start bogging down and slowing down the process of that deduction while you raise questions about how they made their calculations, etc. So that's going to be a bit of a ball ache for employers. So the other thing is, however, despite subsections 1 and 2, which talks about how they can calculate the deduction, an employer may, instead of calculating and applying a deduction, just impose a 10% deduction on the salary or wages that are payable.
Which then cuts us out as unionists, because we can't request, and they're not required to, provide the calculations they made, because they didn't.
They just haven't made a calculation.
This from a manufacturing point of view, I know that within an hour, our team could put out, we used to wrap food, so we could put out a tray, and each tray costs $1,120. So that's the money that they would have got from that. So it's a team of 11. So that works out to be $10 an hour each. Is that still, that's where I'm getting all this calculation from. Like, if that's minimum wage, that's half your wage for 1 hour's work, gone. And yeah, we could do 12 trays in an hour, maybe.
So then I guess if they can calculate that reasonably and legitimately, and they show that calculation to us, we probably don't have any recourse to say, oh, you calculated it wrong. Because they've provided all of the information that is required by law. And that, what it is, it's to scare the workers off working to rule or going slow and doing those low-level industrial actions.
So then that means...
Because some people might say 10%, fine. Go on then, 10% for half of my shift. Take 10% of my wage. But in that case, if it's half your hourly wage based on the value of a tray, I wouldn't do that. I was working for minimum wage and they said they were going to take half my minimum wage per hour for the duration of my partial strike. I would say no. There's no way in hell I'm doing this. But then that would lead us to the other alternative, which is just a full withdrawal of labour.
All out.
Yeah.
A proper all-out strike. If they make it such that you're being penalised such an amount of your wage... Potentially, it would make sense just to withdraw labour entirely, because you're only going to be getting, you know, hypothetically, you might get 15% of your wage for the duration of the partial strike. Just strike.
Yeah, I just want to toe talk with that in terms of what Minister Van Velden has said in her release, that these changes will help both employers and unions to return to the bargaining table. However, a strike cannot occur until you've already done, 40 days of bargaining. Yeah. So you're already at the bargaining table. So right from the outset, lies, all lies, 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 lies.
Because she doesn't know. I feel like she's never had a real job. Process or collective negotiations at all.
She's never had a real job. She went straight from university into a consulting firm to attack unions and now into the ACT Party. Her whole career has been built on not doing real work and just using legislation and to try and attack workers.
Like, isn't that like half of the Tory MPs?
Oh yeah, yeah. But in her case, you know how the right loves to bang on against these career politicians. Case in point, career politician who actually doesn't understand what they've been tasked to legislate.
Because it cracks me up that she could go from university to a consulting firm. What are you consulting on? You have no real-world knowledge of anything you're consulting on.
You could write something, sure, but so can ChatGPT.
Yeah. What does the book say we should do?
Exactly.
It's like, no.
So she says that the changes were needed to ensure a fairer bargaining process. Well, I don't know, maybe employers could just act in good faith and pay people. That would be a fair bargaining process.
Mm-hmm.
Recognize.
Pretty sure that's already in the law.
Yeah. And minimize the disruption partial strikes have caused to public and customer service. One, please provide your sources because, I mean, back to Gina's point there, if you're in manufacturing and a company is producing 10 trays of food an hour instead of 12, who's going to notice? let's be real here. Who the hell is going to notice?
Yep.
But the other thing is it's not going to minimize the disruption because if we've got workers who are going, okay, well, I don't want to lose 10% of my wages, but I also don't want to lose this bargaining campaign, full strike, you're going to increase those disruptions.
Yep.
That's all you're going
to
do.
Potentially, we need to show this government, and what it'll do is it'll show Labor that it actually needs to be repealed. We need to show this government that we just go out on strike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no slow build-ups. There's no sticker-ups, and because that was a huge part of the Woolworths campaign for Workers First, was that sticker-up. I'm a union member, and it's just wearing a sticker, but that could be seen as partial.
Yep, it will be. And for the entire time that you're wearing that sticker, you'll lose 10% of your hourly rate.
Yeah, so they're just going to go, oh, well, stop it. No one, you've got self-checkouts there, I'm going to go stand outside, might as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you're going to be punishing people for, you know, some of the other things that we didn't talk about in the partial strikes, like you said, stickers, you know, wearing like a coordinated colour scheme to work or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's your freedom of speech to express your dissatisfaction with the collective agreement as it stands. And so if you're going to be punished for expressing your freedom of speech, do we then need to start thinking about whether the Human Rights Commission has a look over applications of this law? Do we start looking at precedents that this is going to set up? Because yet again, this government has just done this blanket, like, sledgehammer approach to attacking workers because our economy is in crisis because capitalism worldwide is
in crisis.
Yeah, but I mean, they're not thinking about those wide-ranging, like, further context down the road. Like, it's the same with when they brought in the charter schools legislation and put a ban on multi-employer collective agreements. Well, we can now challenge that in the to the International Labour Organization and the World Trade Organization because that is a ban on people's rights to collectively bargain. Yep. They're doing these things in breach of other obligations.
That's what the NZCTU have come out and said, that they're arguing that the bill undermines the right to strike and violates international labour standards.
Yeah.
Under Convention 98.
This government, I still maintain that these three parties didn't genuinely think they were going to be in power after the last election. Now they're scrambling around with these half-cooked, poorly thought-out legislation that's going to have all these wide-ranging effects beyond what they think they're legislating for, and it's going to they're turning us into a pariah state.
They are, but what they're doing, I think anyway, is that, you know, David Seymour is like Timu Trump, right? And if you read any summaries of Project 2025, this is just like par for the course of what is happening in the United States. So, you know, you think about the fact that if they didn't actually think they were going to get in after the last election, they did. They basically, and I believe David Seymour is doing this, is he's like, well, full steam ahead with the US-style libertarian crap, the emphasis on private property and individual rights over collective rights, and that he already has a playbook by which to actually implement this stuff. So make sure we vote them out next time because we don't want more than a Timu Trump. If we get Timu Trump, that's cool, because I don't want no ICE Gestapo marching around in our major cities, like, disappearing people and, you know, tossing them 30 feet off a bloody cliff. Anyway, Dawn Ray.
Just saying, it's happened in New Zealand before, so the threat actually is genuine.
Absolutely.
This is not hyperbole at all.
Absolutely.
I think the other thing to allude back to this, so yeah, there's two ways we can look at this. Is this government incompetent, or are they scarily competent? And given, you know, David Seymour's connections around the world, given where he's come from, I think David Seymour is scarily competent. And I think the National Party, Luxon may or may not be competent, but he's the leader that party wanted, because they wanted Seymour's policies without the public flak. They can use Seymour as like this little attack bulldog. And then at the next election, they can go, oh, yeah, Seymour was a little bit rabid, wasn't he? But that was just our coalition agreement. Meanwhile, they get everything they want, which is more power to the employers, more destruction of New Zealand's living standards. You know, in the 70s, when we had compulsory unionism, everywhere was governed by like industry-wide agreements and minimum standards, fair pay awards we just lost, New Zealand had the third highest standard of living in the world.
Yeah.
And since the 90s, it has just eroded and eroded and eroded, because we've just given more power to big capital to come in here and just kick us around. Like, if we look at the Uber appeal at the moment, you know, so it was ruled that Uber contractors are Uber employees. Mm-hmm. Uber's a multi-billion dollar American company who's coming in here to try and influence how our courts interpret our laws so that they can super exploit our workers.
Yes.
It's imperialism. And David Seymour, with his Atlas Network connections, who also were consulting on the Project 2025, we have to start thinking about, you know, how vulnerable are we to this international money coming in and trying to reshape Aotearoa's economy to make it just hyper-extraction, low wages, low skill, low education.
Yep. One of the things that it makes me think about is, like, so you know how over in the United States, you've got this kind of coalition of big business, of those tech billionaires who all put, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars into Trump. So they obviously have some idea about what Trump's doing. With the ICE deportations and people just being tossed over the border into Mexico, I saw something really cool yesterday, which was based in this little kind of shanty town called Cartolandia, which is like the land of cartons, basically. They all live, these are all recently deported people, and they live in shacks and shanties made of pieces of drywall and shipping pallets and stuff.
Yeah, corrugated iron and
stuff. A lot of them were employed by the massive Amazon fulfillment center that was right on the other side of the fence.
I've seen that picture.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So in my mind, you know, Jeff Bezos is kind of like, all right, I'm going to get in with Trump. He's going to deport a bunch of Americans, because these are Americans. These are people that were born in or grew up just 15 minutes away in San Diego. They get tossed over the fence to work for $1.80 in Mexico at the Amazon fulfillment center. Mm-hmm. So they just, you know, offshore that work 15 minutes down the road into Mexico, and then don't have to pay the US minimum wage.
Yeah.
They get all of this cheap labor. So I wonder whether Jeff Bezos was cognizant of this, or knew up front that this is what was going to happen so that he could get cheaper labor in Mexico. It makes me worry about what the potential next term for a right-wing coalition government could be, because we know that in places like Fiji, the minimum wage is like $4 or something. So I know it sounds like some conspiratorial crap, but what if they just decided to remove citizenship from Fijians, or, you know, people of Fijian origin or something, decided to deport them back there and chuck some manufacturing over there at $4 an hour, rather than, what are we at now for the minimum wage?
23.80.
Financial, makes financial sense.
It does. It does. The other aspect of that, that's a real concern. But what typically New Zealand has done, and Australia has done to Pacific nations, and I think I'm outside the 12 months NDA country. Okay, so what really broke my soul working for Immigration New Zealand.
Mm.
So what New Zealand and Australia do is we take half a year's labour power out of the Pacific Island nations to get them to work in our horticulture sector. So, you know, because the wages in New Zealand are higher than they are in the Pacific, you have their best and brightest will come over here for half a year and will earn like 2 years worth of wages there, and we'll send it all back home as remittances. Tonga's GDP, 70% remittances from overseas.
Mm.
So what happens to a country when you take their workforce away for half a year every year? They can't develop their own industries. They have a chronic labor shortage.
Yep.
They have a chronic service shortage. They can't build anything. They can't maintain their own. They stay in desperation And it's like this permanent pool of labor that we can bring over, pay piecemeal wages, no yep. organizing, put them in slave camps like that one that was discovered in Hawke Bay a few years ago, the only modern slavery case mm-hmm. administered in New Zealand.
Yep.
And look, I mean, they don't only work in, you know, those hard to organize areas. They do work in retail, they work yep. in manufacturing, increasingly in logistics, particularly relevant for Palmerston North, which is still skyrocketing as a logistics hub for Aotearoa. And so this law just seeks to decrease the ability for New Zealand workers to organize even more, increase the precarity here, because it's a pain in the ass to build anything in the Pacific. It's hugely expensive to get resources out there. There's not much land to build a mega factory on. Like, if you tried to build something in Tonga, you know, one Amazon fulfillment center would take up the entire
island.
So, like, the physically, it's going to be very hard to ship large-scale industry to the Pacific. Next best option, good old Aotearoa.
Yep.
So if we have a look at what's coming down the pipeline currently, so we've got the partial strikes making it harder to, you know, just do some low-level action. We've got, you know, erosion of health and safety legislation. We're moving back to a, could you please look after the workers rather than, hey, actually, you need to provide a safe working place and you're going to face consequences if you don't. I think WorkSafe, while already overworked, were further gutted from staff. That's coming down the line. Then we've got the fast-track legislation, which is opening up our land to further resource extraction. We've got this
regulatory standards bill.
We've got the regulatory standards bill as well. So already the New Zealand government is open to being sued under World Trade Organization agreements and fair trade agreements with individual countries for legislation which acts counter to international capital. This just entrenches it in our constitution and in our entire legislative framework. Because you can still you can still challenge international trade agreements under, like, your right of sovereignty. And so it's not as clear cut. But if we cede our right of sovereignty to legislate in our people's best interests through the RSB, we're going to have no grounds to challenge anything. And so what I'm starting to see from this government is a move to highly extractive, low value production in New Zealand, and opening it up to international companies to come and do that extraction. So, like, Rio Tinto and, like, big mining conglomerates, which is bad for us because all of the profit and the surplus value generated by our workforce in these industries, they're going to come here and employ us, obviously. But all of the profit then goes overseas. And, you know, we're just basically they're just setting us up for, like, this really, really horrible economy that is just pure exploitation, pure extraction, just putting us at the bottom of the production chain for all of those richer countries to come and exploit us. And we were talking about how there's two ways that you can increase profit in an economy. You can have high-skilled, high-educated workers who are producing a lot of output per worker, or you can just have a boatload of poorly educated people who die early but produce lots and lots of kids for the next generation to just resupply that labour pool, which is where this government's taking us.
If we were to think about what people should be doing right now, because that's all very dreary stuff, but it's all coming down the pipeline, what we need is we need people to be involved at every level so that we can put the brakes on this, assuming that we get the critical mass, get a centre-left government back in that can potentially repeal, overturn a lot of these in its first 100 days. There's a presentation coming up at the Palmerston North City Library around the retention of Māori wards. There is a referendum happening alongside the local body elections. So there is a presentation happening at 5:30 p.m. on August
the 8th.
August the 8th, with a bunch of brilliant speakers who are going to be talking to the value of Te Ao Māori, the value of Mātauranga Māori, and the value of having the Māori ward seat in the Palmerston North City Council. So those local body elections are really important, that you get enrolled and that you turn out, stop any potential ACT members who might throw their hat in the ring to get elected. We've been told it's happening in the Hawke's Bay and all around the country. We don't want ACT in local government as well as central government.
We don't want ACT in New Zealand, full stop.
No, we don't want... No, I won't say that. Anyway,
Rotate.
So that's something to think about. Make sure that your family and friends are enrolled and that you get ready to vote in your local elections and the referendum to retain the Māori wards.
Yeah. Now, it's important to note that the referendum is not just asking Māori voters if they want to keep their ward. It's asking everyone. So if you're not on the Māori roll, I think the deadline closed last week to change.
On Friday.
So if you're not on the Māori roll, but you still see the value in having the Māori wards, still vote yes. We need all of those allies doing that. We need something like 23,000 votes to win that. I think we can do it, but I think we just need to make sure that everyone who understands the value of that is getting out there, getting voting, getting enrolled, getting their friends to vote. Having those really boring conversations at work, like, hey, have you heard about the referendum? Like being that guy.
Come to every event that you can, normalise, make it normal for you to come out to these union events, to these community events, to the rallies and the protests that will continue to ramp up in the streets. Because if you're not in the streets, you're at home on the internet and you're not doing jack. Get up in the streets, show the government that you actually have some opposition, because that's what they're going to see. Shame them in the media. They don't care if you're moaning on Facebook.
Yep. One other aspect of hope in that, there are 300,000 unionised workers in New Zealand currently. So you are not alone. It's not the majority of our workers, of our workforce, unfortunately, but that's a huge number of people. So you're not alone. It's a good support system. There's good campaigns, great ways to get involved, huge amounts of training. Like if you want to get involved but you don't know, get engaged, get involved in your union, do your delegate training. You'll learn how to have those organising conversations. You'll learn networks. You'll get involved in your community. You'll find like-minded people. And then you'll just feel so much less isolated. You'll feel part of that bigger collective and you'll feel empowered to go out and take on these changes.
We can win. Let's do it. That's us. Ka kite whānau. Stand up and stand by our union.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.